I was distracted by the news as I was getting ready here to come on the air. Hi, by the way, this is your NXT TakeOver review. We're going to talk about TakeOver in a second. But I was distracted by the news that Floyd Mayweather is apparently coming out of retirement in February to fight Logan Paul for what is going to be the easiest payday that probably any fighter has ever gotten in the history of boxing or fighting or any kind of combat sport. And here I thought that Goldberg wrestling The Fiend in Saudi Arabia in, what, 3 minutes? I figure that was the easiest payday ever, but now Floyd Mayweather has him topped. I actually can't wait to see that. I'm very interested to see how that turns out. It will not turn out well for Logan Paul. This is your NXT TakeOver War Games 2020 review for Sunday, December 6, 2020. I am the Solemn Monster. Thank you guys for choosing me for your NXT coverage tonight. I also find it amusing that WWE chose to run a tribute to the troop show on the same day as a pay-per-view called War Games. I find that very amusing for some reason. Top to bottom, I thought this was a very good show. This was not my favorite takeover of the year, I don't think. Yeah, these takeovers are a little bit different because they're not in front of that audience where you have 10, 15,000 people screaming, you know, we love NXT and this is awesome and all the stuff that you're so used to seeing on these takeover specials. It's a different environment. Even the lighting tonight is a little grittier, a little bit darker. I didn't really hate that. I actually kind of liked it, but it's just different. These takeover shows are you almost have to put like a little star next to them. I think eventually when you grade these against all the other NXT takeovers, I thought it was a very strong show. I thought there wasn't a single bad match on the card tonight. You had matches that I thought were good, and then you had matches like what we saw in the War Games, both with the women and the men. I thought they both delivered. I thought they both knocked it out of the park. The women did in the opener. The men did in the main event. An incredible main event. And obviously, there's going to be a lot of sore bodies when they wake up tomorrow morning, as is usually the case. And there may be an injury, unfortunately, coming out of the women's match. We'll talk about that. We have a lot to get into here. We have to start with the women's War Games match. Two rings, one cage. You guys know the rules as far as War Games is concerned. It's the same every year. Team Shotzi, Shotzi Blackheart, Ember Moon, Rhea Ripley, and Io Shirai, the NXT women's champion, taking on Team Candice. Candice LeRae, Toni Storm, Dakota Kai, and Raquel Gonzalez. Shotzi has a new tank. If you remember, her tank was destroyed many weeks ago on TV by Candice LeRae, and she was heartbroken. She was very upset over what had happened, and I didn't really, you know, fully understand why she was freaking out so much. It took a few weeks, and then they explained the significance of the tank. She has members of her family that either currently serve or in the past have served in the military. Would have been nice for them to explain that before Candice destroyed the tank. But now she's got a brand new one. It's got a giant skull on the front. This tank actually looks like a beast compared to her old one. She even fired a Nerf missile at the cage. I said coming into this that I feared for Shotzi Blackheart. I feared for her well-being. I feared for her life. The risks that she takes in her matches, the bumps that she takes, the apron bumps. I was very worried that something bad would happen here, but I am happy to report that Shotzi is alive and well. I think she came away from this match pretty much unscathed, which may have been the biggest surprise of the night. Dakota Kai started for the heels, Ember Moon for the babyfaces. Shotzi Blackheart was out next, since she won the woman advantage for her team in the ladder match against Raquel on Wednesday night. So a rare situation where the babyfaces won the advantage. That's not usually what you do in a War Games match. Usually you give it to the heels. That's what they did with the men. But here the women on the babyface side had the advantage. Shotzi immediately pulled a toolbox out from under the ring. Not quite sure what Michael Cole was doing under there, but she brought the toolbox inside. Dakota, the heel, was fighting off both of the baby faces. So, you know, I was getting some Twitter replies from people saying this just feels backwards. And look, the psychology was ass backwards here. Like I was saying, normally in this situation, you would have the baby faces working from underneath. It's a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-1 heel advantage. That's usually the way you do it. And the reason you do it that way is because you want to build sympathy on the baby faces for when they make their comeback, or when one of the baby faces who still hasn't come in the match yet, they storm down to the ring. I mean, that's why it's always done that way. That's why it was done that way so many times, even in the NWA and WCW. There's a reason for that. But you can't always have the heels win the advantage. The heels had it in the main event. You got to change it up every now and then. You can't just do one thing and not every now and then let the baby faces get the advantage. So I didn't have an issue with that. I mean, you're right. The psychology is a little weird, but in that situation, I really didn't have a problem with it. They did a spot where Dakota was on the shoulders of Ember Moon, and Shotzi hit a missile drop kick off of her shoulders. Raquel Gonzalez was next into the match, and this was, you know, we have seen Rhea Ripley grow a lot in NXT, and off the top of my head, I don't really recall there being one particular match that was really a breakout for Rhea. I think it was a gradual thing, although in the War Games match, I think last year, she was impressive. Well, this was all about Raquel Gonzalez. This was all about her. Not only did, we'll get to the finish here in a second, but this was, in a lot of ways, I think, not just a way to showcase her, but to show people that, okay, she's ready to move on to that next level. I had somebody ask me, do you think that she's the next Rhea Ripley? You know, I would actually say that I think Rhea, if she's going to be sticking around for a while, I think Rhea and Raquel, I don't want to use the names, you know, big superstar names, because that's not really fair to them. But I think they could be A1, A2 for the women on NXT. And Rhea is already there, right? Everybody knows how good Rhea is, and she just looks like a star. Raquel now is coming on up to her level. And this match tonight was a big breakout performance for her. So she came into this match. She powerbombed Shotzi into the side of the cage. Rhea was in next, and Rhea comes inside, and immediately she and Raquel lock eyes like laser beams, and they go after each other. Rhea pulls a hammer out of the toolbox, hits Dakota with it twice. If you're going to use a hammer, and this hammer looked so phony, but if you're going to use a hammer, for God's sakes, I mean, don't use the hammer just as another spot. You know, you got kendo sticks and chairs and all the usual weapons for that. When you get into wrenches and hammers, you know, if you're going to hit somebody with it, even if it's burying it in the gut, they should be down for a very long time. And of course, that wasn't the case. After a few seconds, Dakota Kai was right back up. But she hit this woman twice with a hammer. I think she hit her in the gut and then she hit her in the back. That I don't like. That is, you know, I can only stretch my suspension of disbelief so far. Leave the hammers out of it. There's a reason why when Triple H would hit somebody with a sledgehammer, they wouldn't get up. Rhea and Raquel turn their attention back to one another. They start wrestling around on the mat. Oh, Cobalt, that's a good point. Cobalt in the chat says, use a ball. Wasn't it a ball peen hammer? Wasn't that what Aces and Eights used to use in Impact? I should know this. I was watching at the time. It was the ball peen hammer. I don't care what kind of hammer it is. It could be a ball peen hammer. It could be a regular hammer. It could be a hammer fish. I don't care. Got to save weapons like that for a big spot or a big injury angle. Toni Storm was out next for Team Candice. She goes under the ring and pulls out a whole batch of my favorite weapon. Kendo sticks. I've talked about how overused I think the kendo stick is. She brought a whole batch of them. They look like a whole bunch of bamboo sticks that were just tied together waiting there under the ring. She brings them into the cage. She gets inside, pulls off one of the top turnbuckle pads. Toni goes to another corner. She pulls off the middle turnbuckle pad. And I'm thinking to myself, she's channeling her inner Yano. Toni Storm had a Yano moment here in the War Games match. She's undoing turnbuckle pads left and right. She morphed into Yano here. There's a visual. She sends Rhea spine first into the exposed top buckle. Io Shirai was the last member of the babyface team to come out of the shark cage, and down to the ring she comes. She tried to get into the cage with what else? A kendo stick. But Raquel holds the cage door closed so she couldn't get in. Now, Io eventually grabbed a ladder. And she was attempting to bring the ladder into the ring with her, but again, she gets knocked out. Now, the ladder, she pulled the ladder inside. But Io keeps getting knocked down. She can't get into the cage. And if she can't get into the cage, then the match can't technically begin, because you cannot get a pinfall or a submission until every single member is in the cage, is in one of the rings. And Io, no matter what she does, she just can't get inside. Gonzalez kept knocking her down. So then she tried to scale the cage wall, and Raquel powerbomb Shotzi into the wall of the cage, and again knocks down Io. Candice LeRae was the last one in. Well, I guess Candice was the last one in. I thought Io was. Candice was the last one in, but when she gets down to the ring, who does she encounter? Io Shirai. But before Io can do anything, from behind comes Indy Hartwell. And Indy Hartwell knocks down Io Shirai. She grabs a chair, tosses the chair into the cage. She grabs a trash can that Candice handed to her. I think it was one trash can. Puts the trash can inside the cage. And she uses a chain, does Indy, to chain the door shut. She takes the key to the chain, to the lock, and puts it in her shirt. And is basically taunting the referees, oh, well, if you want it, come and get it. So that was never really mentioned again. It was kind of dumb. I mean, it was never really brought up again because Io found a different way to get into the cage. But she tucked the key away in a very safe place. So it was kendo sticks galore. If you are a fan of kendo sticks being used in wrestling, then this was your match. You had kendo sticks galore being used as weapons inside of War Games. The heels were just teeing off on Shotzi. They broke one of the sticks over her back. Io has had enough. And she climbs to the top of the cage with a garbage can. And this will be a gif. I'm sure it'll pop up on Twitter. She had this great smile on her face. Like, she was so proud of what she was about to do. Stupid as I thought it was. I mean, it was entertaining. She takes the garbage can. She channels her inner Oscar the Grouch. She puts the garbage can over her body, so now she can't see, and she dives off the top of the cage down onto all of the bodies down below. Now, why she had to put the garbage can over her head, who knows? But she did finally manage to get into the ring, and that means the match can now officially begin. All the babyfaces held down Raquel Gonzalez for Io to hit the moonsault off the top rope. She went for the pin. All the heels dove in to break it up. Candice, with the Gargano escape, she had a wrench that happened to be in her hand. So when she put the Gargano escape on, she has the wrench. She uses the wrench for the assist. The wrench assist, we can call it, on Ember Moon. Ember Moon now is, she's got nowhere to go. Shotzi had a submission, though, of her own on one of the heels. And so Candice let go of the submission on Ember to go break up the other one. Dakota Kai hit a double stomp to the garbage can. Io Shirai is inside the garbage can. She's laying on the mat. She's got the garbage can over her head, yet again. And off the top rope comes Dakota with a double stomp. She tried then to, I guess she was going to go for the pin, but she's trying to pull the garbage can off of Io, but she can't get it off. She dented that thing so hard on the way down that she could not get the garbage can off of her. It took her about 10 seconds to finally pull this thing off. And when she went for the pin, the referee hit two, and the camera inexplicably cut away and showed Shotzi Blackheart laying on the mat. Why would the camera cut away at that moment? Was Kevin Dunn in charge of production on the show tonight? I thought he stayed away from the NXT shows. What was going on here? That was the worst possible time for a camera cut. Thankfully, the match didn't end there. We would have missed the finish. Ember with the eclipse to Dakota Kai. This was the spot of the match, as far as I'm concerned. I know, you had Io off the top of the cage. Ember, when she hits this move, just right. The Eclipse is one of the coolest looking finishers, one of the more devastating looking finishers that anybody has, I think, on that roster. She hit the Eclipse to Dakota, throat first onto two chairs. That was a hell of a spot. That looked brutal. Could have easily been the finish, but the pin got broken up. Storm Zero to Ember onto another trash can. Io breaks it up. Shotzi climbs the ladder. Here's where I was thinking, okay, here we go. Here's where things get very dangerous. Well, what's she going to do? She going to do some kind of triple somersault here off the ladder? She going to fall on her head? What is this woman going to do? She climbs to the top of the ladder, hits a senton down onto Candice LeRae. And Candice, though, had a steel chair across her body. She's like holding it against her body. So now she's down. Shotzi is down. Remember that spot, because I'm going to come back to it at the end. Io hit a moonsault onto Dakota. Tony, though, tackles Rhea, and in tackling Rhea, they both fell into them and broke up the pin. Raquel hits a single-arm powerbomb to Io Shirai. Through the ladder, there was a ladder bridge set up between the two rings. She hits a single-arm powerbomb through the ladder bridge, down in between the two rings, and she gets the pinfall to win the War Games for Team Candice. So not only was this a very impressive night for Raquel Gonzalez, very dominant, right? She came away from this looking great. She got the win. Not only did she get the win, she pinned the women's champion to win the match. And that's important, because what that shows us now is where things are headed. I said on the podcast earlier today, you had to have Io in the match. You already didn't have your NXT champion on the show. You have to have the women's champion on the show. And depending on who wins the match and how things go, we're going to probably get a pretty good sense coming out of the show about who the next contender might be. It could be a member of her own team, or it could be one of the heels. And judging from the finish here, I think we have a pretty good sense of who the next contender is going to be. If you're going to pin the champion on TV, then there's only one logical next step, and that is that the person who pins the champion is next in line for a title shot, plain and simple. And it looks like that person is going to be Raquel Gonzalez. And you know what? If she wins the title, and I would be all for it, if they want to pull the trigger on a title change and belt her and put the belt onto her, I think that would be a great idea. She feels like she's really been building a lot of momentum. And I think Io is a great champion. But Io does not have to be the champion. She doesn't have to hold on to the title for months and months and months. If you want to put the title on Raquel Gonzalez and really build around her as something of a monster champion, if Rhea Ripley is going to stick around for a while, I still feel like she's main roster bound for Raw soon. They could really use her. I don't necessarily want to see her go. In fact, I really don't want to see her go. I don't want to see anybody go to the Raw roster. So if she's going to stick around for a while, if they put the title on Raquel Gonzalez, you could build to another match down the road between Raquel and Rhea, and it could be for the championship. So I like that. If they're thinking along the same lines, I like that idea. That's a match that I'd like to see. But over half an hour this match went, a little over 30 minutes. I thought this match was a lot of fun. Second year in a row that the ladies delivered. It started out a little slow, but it got really good, and I liked how dominant they booked Gonzalez. And thankfully, Shotzi didn't kill herself. Now, unfortunately, not everybody escaped unscathed. Candice LeRae may have suffered an arm injury. It was on the spot that I mentioned where Shotzi hit that senton off the ladder. Candice had the chair, and Shotzi landed on top of her. PW Insider says the fear. She was being looked at in the trainer's room, and the fear, this is not confirmed, but the fear is that she may have broken a bone in her, I don't know if it's in the arm, in the wrist, or what, but she may have suffered some kind of broken bone. So we'll have to wait and see what the official diagnosis is. If you watch the end when the heels are celebrating, you know, Candice, they're all getting their hands raised, and Candice has a smile on her face, but her right arm, she's keeping it to her side. So clearly there was some kind of an arm injury. Whether something is broken, we don't know. So unfortunately, not everybody was able to get out of the match in one piece, the way they came in. Tommaso Ciampa, one-on-one with Timothy Thatcher. The last Ciampa takeover singles win before tonight. I said this earlier on episode 680. I had to look it up because I was thinking when I was doing my predictions, you know, I predicted that I thought Ciampa would win. But I said, when was the last time Ciampa had a win? And I know he did in the War Games match last year, a year ago. But I couldn't think of the last singles match because he was gone for so long with the injury and then he came back. I couldn't remember when the last singles victory was. And it was almost 2 years ago. 2 years ago next month. He beat Aleister Black at NXT TakeOver Phoenix in January of 2019. That's pretty nuts. Pretty nuts. I loved his ring gear when he came out, Ciampa. He came down with a mask on that reminded me of Jason's mask in Jason X, which is a very polarizing movie. Most people just hate it and they pretend it doesn't exist. For some people, it's their favorite movie in the Friday the 13th series. Jason goes to space. The mask is like melded onto his face. He looks very futuristic. That's what Tommaso Ciampa reminded me of. Although Troy, on my Twitter timeline, told me that he thinks he was paying tribute to Scorpion from Mortal Kombat. I mean, I guess I could see that. It's possible. He did kind of have like the gold or like yellowish garb. But to me, it looked more like Jason X. Either way, he looked badass in the mask. He should wrestle in the mask. Just keep it on. Why not? The Fiend wrestles in a mask. So why can't Ciampa? A lot of chain wrestling and MMA-type offense here to start. Not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but I was enjoying it. Thatcher caught Ciampa with an uppercut, and the referee was checking on Ciampa for a while. At first, I thought he got his bell rung, or maybe he was kind of holding his neck. You know, Ciampa has the history of neck problems, but he was just selling an injury for the match. Told the referee, nope, I'm good to go. So the match continued. Thatcher went for a butterfly suplex. Ciampa reversed out of it with a backdrop. And Ciampa hit a whole series of clotheslines, perched Thatcher up top on the rope, hit a superplex for a two count. Ciampa went for the fairy tale ending, but Thatcher countered with a chop to the throat. He applied a front sleeper, and Ciampa, the same move he used on Ciampa on NXT last week to put him out, same move Hulk Hogan used on Richard Belzer when he put him out many years ago. That cost Hulk Hogan some money. So he put Ciampa down. Ciampa was fighting back, ended up outside the ring, and he barely made it back into the ring before the count of 10. Ciampa hit two running knee strikes, one of which caught Thatcher on the right ear, busted his ear open, so he was bleeding from the... It looked like his ear exploded. Ciampa went for a backslide. Thatcher escaped out onto the apron. And Ciampa tied Thatcher up in the ropes and started to lay in some chops. Finally hit Willow's bell and got the pin. Hard-hitting stuff here in this match from these two. This came off like a match that you would see on the undercard of a New Japan show. It's kind of what it reminded me of. Good match. I thought that this was, of all the matches on the card, the weakest of all the matches. It was the one I liked it, but it was the one that I liked the least. I would put the strap match just slightly above this one. So I was not totally on board with the match, but there was nothing wrong with it. And there was some good action here. As much as I don't like Thatcher losing so many matches, he's lost way too many matches. As much as I don't like that, Ciampa was due. I mean, I said before, almost 2 years since he won a singles match on a takeover show. This guy, he is sort of the heart and soul of NXT. Somebody asked me before, is he kind of like the Undertaker of NXT? I guess in a way, you can kind of maybe look at him that way. I'm sure he's something of a locker room leader down there. He's the veteran. He's been there longer than most. But he was due. You know, he was due for a win. My idea from earlier today was Ciampa wins. I figured Ciampa would win, but then this builds to one more match between these two, but put it in the fight pit. We only saw one fight pit match so far. It was Thatcher and Matt Riddle. Thatcher got the win. That sent Riddle off to the main roster to become the resident dunce on Monday Night Raw. Bro, bro. So he went off. I love that match. I love the fight pit match. I hope they bring it back. Not too much, not too often, but they can bring it back. I'd like to see it become the specialty match for Timothy Thatcher. And he's lost a bunch of matches, but they end up in the fight pit, and he gets his win. He gets his big win over Tommaso Ciampa. I mean, if he just keeps losing, it's going to be hard to take this guy seriously. It doesn't matter how many mean faces he makes. You know, he's got the missing teeth. He looks all mean and nasty. It doesn't matter if he keeps losing. You got to win. You want to build credibility, you got to win. He should teach that lesson. His next Thatch Can session on TV. It's all about winning. Nothing else matters. We had Dexter Lumis against Cameron Grimes in a strap match. Lumis wrestled Roderick Strong in a strap match back at the Great American Bash. He won that match. So would history repeat itself? Would lightning strike twice here tonight on this show? Grimes brought his own strap to the ring. He refused to use the one that the referee was insisting he wear. He says, nope, it's my strap or no strap. And the referee asked Lumis, do you mind if we use this guy's strap? And of course, Lumis just stared at him because he doesn't say anything. It's like Michael Myers. He doesn't speak. He just stares. He just stares. That's what he does. Grimes attacked him before the bell. And he was beating him around, all in the ring, out of the ring. Match hasn't even started yet. Finally, they get back inside. Lumis makes a comeback. He takes the other cuff to the strap that was already tied to Cameron Grimes' wrist, and he puts it around his own, and the match is now officially underway. Grimes got thrown into the barricade multiple times until he returned the favor on Lumis and started whipping him into the barricade. Grimes gave Lumis a back suplex over the barricade. And I was talking about what happened on SmackDown Friday night. It was Drew McIntyre and Sheamus in the main event. And Sheamus got thrown over the barricade, and we never saw him again. But the announcers, they make it out like you would think it was just a pit of lava on the other side of that barricade. And they strategically don't show you the bump. When somebody gets thrown over the barricade, I'm sure they put the crash pad down or something. They don't want you to see it. On the replay, they showed Grimes dumping Lumis over, and he flung him. I mean, he took a hell of a bump. So, yeah, there better be some padding on that other side. But they didn't shoot it because they didn't want you to see it. So that buys Grimes some time now. He's trying to catch his breath, and eventually we see Lumis peek his eyes up, right? He peeks his head up like the evil villain coming back to life. Grimes goes over there by the announce desk. He's got Lumis over there, and he grabs the velvet bag. There's a velvet bag that had the other strap inside. He takes the velvet bag, though, and he puts it over Lumis's head. So now it's like the blindfold match from TV a few weeks ago. Puts the bag over his head. He's whipping Lumis with that second strap. Lumis eventually hits a spine buster, pulls the bag off his head. Back in the ring, Lumis is just whipping the hell. He's whipping the tar out of Cameron Grimes. Grimes fights out of a bulldog and hits a German suplex into the turnbuckle, grabs a chair, and he attacks Lumis with it. Grimes opens the chair in the ring, and he sets it down on the mat, and he sits down. He's catching a breath. He's taunting Dexter Lumis. Dexter Lumis is down on all fours. Lumis, though, pulls Grimes into a fallaway slam. They trade strikes. Lumis gains the upper hand. He goes back to the top rope, which is a dumb thing to do in a strap match because, of course, Cameron Grimes yanks him off the top rope. Not too bright. Not too bright is this Dexter Lumis guy. He's actually pretty dumb. So Lumis now... I think Lumis was sitting in the chair. And I figure Cameron Grimes is going to give him the cave-in through the chair. Like, that's what he's going to go for. And he tries for it, but Lumis avoids it. He uses the strap to trap Grimes' feet. And he trips him, and Grimes goes face first, where the side of his head catches the edge of the chair on the way down. And that was pretty much the beginning of the end. He got the head and arm choke on Grimes, and Grimes had nowhere to go. Cameron Grimes taps out. Another loss to Dexter Lumis here for Cameron Grimes. Both men I thought looked good. I was hoping Grimes would pull it out. I was hoping Grimes would win and Leon Ruff would retain the North American title, and then Grimes would be the one to take the championship from Leon Ruff. That's what I was hoping for. That's what I had predicted. That is what I was hoping for on this show. This was a bad night for what Solomonster wanted. But they made the most of the strap match stipulation. You know, it can be hard to do a match like that when you're tied to the other guy. And, you know, I watch some strap matches sometimes, and it's obvious they forget. Sometimes if one guy climbs outside, they get tangled in the ropes. Like, it's not the easiest match to do. At least they didn't have the dumb stipulation where you have to tap each turnbuckle in the corner. But they made the most of it. Now it's time to move on. This feud is done. He has now beaten Cameron Grimes twice. It is time for both men to move on to something else. There is nothing left to do here. Nothing. Time to move on. Marquand 1976, thank you for the $5 super chat. He says, Pat McAfee, impress me. Keep up the great work. Pat McAfee has been impressing a lot of people, I think, since he debuted in NXT. And tonight was no different. You know, the guy's willing to put himself out there and, you know, put his body on the line. You got to respect that. And Rizzo, I love TakeOver, and I think they made the right decision in the main event. Why on earth did WWE schedule tribute to the troops on the same day? Well, you can thank Vince McMahon for that. Vince McMahon insisted that they do the show. It wasn't just that it ran on the same day. I don't know, I just love the idea that you have a tribute to the troops the same night you have a war game show. I don't know. Maybe that's why he did it. He loved the play on war. He loved the pun. I don't know. You're asking me to explain what this guy does? Like, I'm supposed to get into the guy's mind and understand what goes through that mind. You know how scary it must be to be inside that head? You know what a nightmare that must be? I don't want to go in there. I have no idea. I have no idea why they tried to compete with themselves on the same day. Don't ask me. I don't have a good answer for you, unfortunately. Vic Joseph was shilling the hell out of the Mattel War Games playset at the announce desk. Because Mattel made a toy. It actually is pretty cool. Like, if I were a kid, I would think that's pretty badass. When I was a kid, and you had the old LJN figures, the WWF ring had the blue bar cage. And I used to have it, and I wish I still had it, too. I'm pissed that I broke it, unfortunately, because my dumbass decided to step into the ring. Yeah, that didn't end too well. The ring was in a state of disrepair after I did that. But this is pretty cool. Got a War Games playset, big cage, over two rings. I'm sure it cost like $50 or something. But as he's shilling this, all of a sudden the lights begin to flicker. So the lights in the COVID Coliseum begin to flicker, and all of a sudden we see a video of, I thought it was a crow, I guess it was a vulture. It's like black and white, you see the vulture. Apparently Wednesdays now are for crows on one channel and vultures on the other. Wednesdays have gone to the birds. Actually, Raw and SmackDown have gone to the birds, because when they go to Tropicana Field, they're going to have pigeons shitting all over the place. That'll be fun to watch. Just wait till Baron Corbin comes out. But we heard Karrion Kross's voice say, TikTok. Pretty much knew who it was once they showed the bird. But then we heard his voice, and everybody knew who it was, except these dumb announcers. The announcers had to play dumb and pretend that they had no idea what this was about. What was that, Wade? Wade, what was that? Well, moving on. Just say the guy's fucking name. Why do they do this? Why do they make their announcers look like a bunch of dipshits? They do it all the time on Raw and SmackDown. I thought NXT was immune to that, but apparently not. Apparently they are training the next generation of announcers to look like dumbasses on television as well. It was the dumbest thing. The minute he said TikTok, you know who it is. Just say who it is. Is he here? Is he coming? Where is he? It's Karrion Kross. He's on his way back. There you go. See, I just did their job for them. Give me the job. Let me sit down. I'll tell the people how it is. Karrion Kross is on his way back, and that's great news, because we didn't know how long he'd be out for. So obviously he is imminently on his way back. I don't know if that means this week. I don't know if that means in a few weeks. Could be next month. You know, they announced a New Year's Evil special episode of NXT for January 6th. So that could be the place where Karrion Kross comes back. Maybe that's the whole, you know, tagline for the show. It has to do maybe with him coming back. I don't know. Just a thought. Triple threat match for the North American title. Leon Ruff defending his championship against Damian Priest and Johnny Gargano. This was excellent. I thought this was an excellent match, even with all the Scream nonsense at the end. I mean, I like Scream, but, you know, a great metaphor or analogy or whatever you want to call it for this match. I like Scream. I like Ghostface. A lot of the sequels, not so much. Well, we got about 10 of them on this show. It was a little much, but the match itself I thought was excellent. So Damian Priest was warning Ruff. He's warning him at the beginning. Every time Ruff would try to take a shot at him, or, you know, he would want to fight him, he would warn him and say, "What are you doing, man? I'm warning you. You better stop." And Leon Ruff didn't stop. In fact, he got tired of hearing it. So he hauled off and he punched. He punched Damian Priest in the face. Damian Priest punched him back, gave him a razor's edge bomb into the plexiglass right through the barricade. He threw this guy. And the whole panel collapsed. And a bunch of referees came over to check on Leon Ruff. And they're asking Damian Priest, "What are you doing, man?" He goes, "Back off." Damian Priest had this look in his face like he was remorseful about what had just happened. He was mouthing that he was sorry. He was apologizing. And I'm thinking to myself, what the hell? You're apologizing, you big puss. It's a championship match. What are you apologizing for? You deserve to lose. You're soft. Apologizing. If I were Johnny Gargano, I would have come up from behind with a low blow. I would have used a barbed wire baseball bat and given him a low blow. Or barbed wire. What was that bat that Abyss used to use in TNA? What do you call it? Oh my God, what was the name? What was the name of that, of the board with the nail in it? Jessica, what the hell did he, I forgot what he called it. He had a name for it. Nancy, it was something. Somebody in the chat help me out here, please. I know one of you know the name of that weapon that Abyss used to use. I would use that and give somebody a low blow. Anyway, they carried Leon Ruff to the back, and it turned into a singles match for a few minutes between Damian Priest and Johnny Gargano. But he was not gone for long. In fact, Leon Ruff, you would think they would hold him out until the end of the match. About 2 minutes later, he came back. And he was already back. Janice, okay, thank you. Wow. I'm surprised that many people were watching Impact at the time. All right, there you go. That's right, Janice. You know, that's right. That's right. Because every time I would say it, it made me think of The Sopranos. Janice. I would take Janice and I would give this guy a low blow and just make him regret the day that he was ever born. He'd be singing soprano. He'd be singing soprano for the rest of his life. So Leon Ruff hit a nice springboard cutter on Johnny Gargano for a near fall. Head to the top rope. Up top goes Leon Ruff, but Damian Priest now stands in his way. And Priest is looking up at Ruff, and he mouths off to him that you're out of chances. And Leon Ruff came down. He got mowed down with a big boot. What do you think it is? Size what? Size 17, size 18 boot. Mowed this kid down. Hit a flatliner on both guys. Did Damian Priest. So Damian Priest now, he's house of fire, man. He's going corner to corner, hitting big body splashes back and forth. He flings Leon Ruff into Johnny Gargano with the broken arrow. Gargano escaped a razor's edge attempt. Posted Priest shoulder first before sending Leon Ruff into Priest. With a lawn dart. He lawn darted this guy. Gargano tied Priest up in the ring ropes on ring number 2. So he took him out of the picture for a while. Went for another lawn dart. Leon Ruff hit a crucifix bomb for a great near fall. Leon Ruff climbs the ropes. Johnny Gargano, though, rolls out of the way of the frog splash attempt. He locks on the Gargano escape. Priest breaks free from the ropes, and he breaks up the pin attempt, and the match continues. At this point, we had three men in the Ghostface costume, the Scream costume. They show up, they emerge onto the scene, and Damian Priest fights them off. All of a sudden, on the other side of the ring, another three guys in the Ghostface mask and the Ghostface costume, they show up as well. And Damian Priest does that step-up dive out over the top rope and wipes all of them out, hits a chokeslam to Johnny Gargano, lays him out on the apron. Frog splash, though, in the ring by Leon Ruff, who takes advantage when Gargano rolls back in. He hits a frog splash and went for a near fall. Priest barely broke it up in time. So now Damian Priest has Johnny Gargano hooked up for the reckoning. Not to be confused with the jobber of the same name in Retribution. That's a different reckoning. The one who lost to Dana Brooke on Monday night. We're talking about a different kind of reckoning. He's got him hooked up for the move. But another ghost face. Because again, there's no DQs in a triple threat match. I mean, you can have pretty much anybody run in. So we have another ghost face. I think this was ghost face number 7 or 8, I think, at this point. 10, maybe number 10. He jumps up on the apron, clobbers Priest from behind with a lead pipe, knocks him out. One final beat DDT by Johnny Gargano and hits Leon Ruff with it. And Johnny Gargano is once again the NXT North American champion. I guess this would be for the third time that he has won the title. So they put the title on Leon Ruff just to do a title change on TV and just get people talking. You know, and I guess it establishes him on TV. I don't think they've done enough. I mean, it's nice he comes out, he's smiling and everything, but, you know, we need like some kind of personality profile, something in depth to get people to know a little bit more about this guy. So they've established him, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that they could have kept the title on him for a little bit. I think they should have kept the title on him for a little bit longer. And again, I would have had Cameron Grimes be the one to take the championship from him. But the match itself, I thought, was excellent. When it was over, Ghostface number 10 unmasked. He took the mask off, and who was it? It was Austin Theory, which I'm sure everybody has been probably thinking, but I've been saying it for weeks. It's Austin Theory. We haven't seen Austin Theory since he quit, probably about a month or two ago. One of the last matches he had was against Johnny Gargano. It was a very hard-fought match, and Gargano was obviously very impressed, and he says, you know what, I'm going to take this kid under my wing. I could use him. He impressed me. He took me to the limit. And so now they are in cahoots together, and I loved what Theory said when he pulled the mask off. He looked directly into the camera, and he used the old Vince McMahon line. He goes, it was me, Austin. It was me all along. I thought that was kind of clever. But Austin Theory is one of the lucky ones who managed to escape the main roster. It's like escaping Alcatraz. He dug his way out. You ever see the Shawshank Redemption? That was Austin Theory, man. He was digging a hole in that wall. It took him a while. But he managed to dig his way out from the main roster and make his way all the way back to NXT, and now good things are happening for him. You'll love to see it. Here's hoping the same can be said soon for Mercedes Martinez. We haven't seen her back on TV yet. This was the point in which they announced the New Year's Eve, or not New Year's Eve. They announced the, it's weird. It's a New Year's special, but it's 6 days after the New Year. It's called New Year's Evil, January 6th. So that will not be a takeover, but that will be a special episode of NXT on the USA Network. Shout out to everybody joining tonight in the chat. Thank you for choosing me for your NXT coverage. It was now time for the men's War Games main event. Kings of NXT, Pat McAfee, Pete Dunne, Oney Lorcan, and Danny Burch against Undisputed Era, the team of Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, Kyle O'Reilly, and Bobby Fish. Undisputed Era was 1-2 in War Games matches coming into the show tonight. They have been in every single War Games match that WWE has done, going back to, I guess it would have been 2017. 1-2 coming into the show tonight. O'Reilly and Dunn started out for their respective teams. Pat McAfee, he teased entering next. So, you know, they have the 5-minute period go by. The heels got the man advantage because Pete Dunn won his ladder match over Kyle O'Reilly a couple of weeks ago. The buzzer gets down to zero. And Pat McAfee teases that he's ready to get in the match. All of a sudden, Oney Lorcan holds him back and says, no. Don't. Not so fast. Let me do it. I'm going to go in. And Pat McAfee says, all right, sure, fine. So in comes Oney Lorcan. Bobby Fish was next to enter. Again, a lot of the brawling at first. I don't need to get into that. It was just a lot of brawling back and forth. The heels had the advantage. Bobby Fish came in, and now all of a sudden the odds were evened a little bit. And then next, yet again, McAfee, okay, I'm ready to come in. Danny Burch says, no, I got this. Don't worry. You hang back here. I got this. I'm coming in next. Burch gets to the ring. He goes underneath the ring. He pulls out an orange bag. And in this orange bag, we come to find out, are two cricket bats. And I'm thinking to myself, well, boy, I guess it's a good thing that the women didn't happen to reach under the ring and pull out a cricket bat. It's like they all knew where their weapons were and to stay away from those and just stick to their own weapons. So we had two cricket bats in this match now. And Pete Dunne actually used one on Bobby Fish. Burch went to use the other one on Kyle O'Reilly, but Kyle locked him in a heel hook and Burch was tapping out like a madman, but it don't matter because no pinfalls or submissions until everybody has been called into the match. He did eventually get to use the bat, though, on O'Reilly, whacked him with it across the back. Roderick Strong was in next. He ran wild until Lorcan ping-ponged him off the side of the cage. And Pat McAfee is finally ready to enter. And here he comes. Here comes Pat McAfee, the big star on NXT now. He really is. Really is probably the, if not the biggest, certainly top three must-see acts, I think we could all agree right now, on NXT. Who else would you consider must-see? I mean, do you consider Finn Balor to be must-see? Probably the women. I would say there's probably Rhea Ripley. I would consider her to be one of the must-see attractions on NXT, but Pat McAfee is up there with her. He gets to the ring, and he starts to yank out multiple tables from underneath the ring, and each one of these tables has the Undisputed Era logo spray-painted onto it, and the name of each member of the group. So there's one table dedicated to Adam Cole, one for Roderick Strong, one for Bobby Fish, and one for Kyle O'Reilly. Custom tables. How nice of him. And he slides each one into the ring, into the cage. McAfee goes up top a few minutes later. Hits a moonsault. Perfect moonsault. And I think he did the same thing in his match with Adam Cole. Picture perfect moonsault. Smooth. Reminded me of an old Kurt Angle or a Charlotte Flair moonsault. Forget the landing. I mean, when Charlotte is actually in the air, in the middle of the moonsault, it actually looks good. Unfortunately, then when she goes to land, it don't look so good. And I don't know if it's because, again, she's so damn tall, she's got those long legs, or if it's the bust and she's worried about, you know, busting another one. I don't know. But it looks horrible when she sticks the landing. Pat McAfee has a better moonsault. And he crashed through Roderick Strong through the first table. Adam Cole. It is now time for him to enter the match. Down to the ring comes Adam Cole. He immediately grabs a fire extinguisher. He hoses down the members of McAfee's squad. He enters the cage. Now the match is officially underway. Everybody has been called in. The cage door has been locked. And the war games can commence. He locks himself in with McAfee, locks eyes with Pat McAfee. Pete Dunne, though, cuts him off before he has a chance to get his hands on him. Dunne goes for the finger snap on Adam Cole, but O'Reilly hits him from behind with a chair. And then Kyle O'Reilly looks over at Pat McAfee, and he says, he's trash-talking this guy. Come on over here, you son of a bitch. You know, you want to talk tough. You want to talk trash about us. And McAfee, he's ready to throw down. So he comes from, you know, ring B back into ring A, and he's coming face to face with Kyle O'Reilly when Adam Cole jumps him from behind, hits him with a chair, I think. And Adam Cole now is wailing away. All of a sudden, a giant brawl with all eight men. A giant brawl breaks out in the middle of the War Games match. McAfee is over in the second ring, and he's got Adam Cole down. He does the Nature Boy, woo, and he's going to go and give him a figure four leg lock. And so he locks it on. He's a student of the game. He locks on the figure four on Adam Cole. All six other guys are brawling in the other ring. So in this one over here, it's just Cole and McAfee. And Cole reverses the hold. Now all the pressure and all the pain is being put upon Pat McAfee. Pete Dunne makes the save. Cole hits the Ushiguroshi to Pete Dunne, only gets two. Undisputed Era tries to send Dunne through Danny Burch, who was laid out across one of the tables. And so they have Pete Dunne kind of on the ropes, and they're going to, you know, almost like a one-arm powerbomb, not unlike what Raquel Gonzalez did in the first War Games match. And they're going to plant Pete Dunne through Danny Burch, and the table is going to break, except the table has other ideas. The table's like, I ain't fucking breaking. So the table doesn't break. And you can kind of see they're trying to figure out, okay, what do we do now? Roderick Strong climbs to the top rope. He does a dive down through both guys, and the table finally breaks. So they took the long way of getting there, but ultimately they got to their destination. Adam Cole then shoves Pat McAfee backwards in another corner off the top rope, and McAfee takes this picture-perfect flat back bump through another table in the ring. He crashes down through the table. I think that was the one that had Kyle O'Reilly's name on it. Undisputed Era traps three of the four members of Team McAfee up against the cage, between the ropes and the cage. And they are just slamming into them repeatedly until they're all just slumped over. All the baby faces turn around. They look into the other ring, and Pat McAfee is all by himself. And they slowly walk over towards McAfee in the other ring. They surround him. And now it's just a gang attack. All four men ganging up on this guy, four on one. And they're bouncing McAfee off the side of the cage over here. They bounce McAfee off the side of the cage over there. Heels come back to rescue McAfee. By this point, we're about 35 minutes into this match. Okay, the first War Games match went about the same length at the beginning of the show. So you know this is going a lot longer because it doesn't feel like we're anywhere close to the finish yet. So we're 35 minutes in. Fast forward a little bit. Adam Cole and Pete Dunne, they're on the top rope. Cole is in the corner. Dunne is on the actual rope holding on to the cage, and he's very wobbly. And Pete Dunne, Adam Cole, comes off with a neck breaker off the top, takes down Pete Dunne. Everybody is down. Superplex from Roderick Strong to Pat McAfee. Now he's down. Everybody is down. Everybody is down. They all recover. They start brawling. Everybody except Pat McAfee. So in this brawl, I'm looking, where's McAfee? I thought he was down in the corner. No, he wasn't down in the corner. They pan up. The camera pans up. And as they're all brawling down below, Pat McAfee has scaled to the top of the cage. This is, by the way, why there is no top on this cage. When they brought War Games back a few years ago, I said, well, they got to have a top on the cage. I mean, that's how War Games used to be. You're supposed to be trapped in the cage. And Triple H said, well, we did it this way because, you know, it allows them to do moves off the top of the cage. You got to do moves. You got to do flips and dives off the top of the cage. You get one every year. And this was, we had Io Shirai in the opening match, right, diving off the top of the cage, and now it was Pat McAfee's turn. You knew Pat McAfee was going to take some kind of bump. Some kind of big bump in this match. You just didn't know how crazy it would be. This was pretty crazy, all things considered, because he's on the top of the cage, and he dives off with a Swanton bomb. And, you know, he landed on everybody on the pile, but it's not like they cushioned his fall. He kind of clipped them on the way down, and he hit the mat. They didn't really do a very good job of catching this guy. So he basically did a Swanton bomb from about, I'd say, it's probably about 12 feet up, 12 or 13 feet up in the air. Probably knocked the wind out of himself on the way down. Now we're back to where we started. We have Pete Dunne and Kyle O'Reilly back up on their feet going at it. That's exactly how this match began. And we're almost 45 minutes in to this match at this point. Dunne snaps the fingers. He hits the bitter end. Kyle kicks out. O'Reilly and Dunne now are standing between the two rings. Okay, so they're in between the two rings. He suplexes Pete Dunne onto the metal grate between the two rings. Goes for the pin, but Dunne kicks out. Kyle O'Reilly places Dunne's face on a chair. So Dunne is just, he's out. He's on his knees. He's got his face. He's laying down on this chair. And up to the top goes Kyle O'Reilly, but Pat McAfee is back. and he nails Kyle with a chair, knocks Kyle off the top rope. Here comes Adam Cole. Back and forth we go. So many turns in this match. So many near falls. Too many near falls. I'll talk about that in a second. But here comes Adam Cole, and now Adam Cole has the steel chair. But before he can use it, Pat McAfee delivers a low blow. Right in the balls. Clearly, he was watching some Ric Flair matches before tonight between the figure four and the wooing and the low blow. We know where, and even his promo style. You could tell who Pat McAfee studied. Ric Flair is absolutely one of his inspirations. I've never heard him say that. Maybe he has. I'm telling you, without even knowing if that's true or not, Ric Flair clearly inspired this guy in his style, his promos. I mean, if you're going, I don't want to say copy off somebody. If you're going to be inspired by somebody, I could think of worse people to be inspired by. But it really came through here in this match. So he gave him a low blow. McAfee setting up for the punt kick. Cole avoids it. So much for selling the low blow. He avoids it, hits a pump kick. Now there's just a whole bunch of crazy action back and forth. McAfee, there's a super kick to Cole. Panama Sunrise attempt. Pat McAfee is going to attempt the Panama Sunrise. But as he comes off the ropes in attempting the move, he eats a super kick. He gets a face full of boot on the way down. And now Cole hits the Panama Sunrise to Pat McAfee, and Pat McAfee kicks out of a fucking destroyer. I didn't like that. You know my thoughts on that anyway. I see it in AEW. People kicking out of destroyers. I'm not a fan of that. And all the abuse that Pat McAfee, the non-wrestler, took up to this point, the guy did a fucking Swanton bomb off the top of the cage, for God's sakes. Now you're giving the guy a destroyer, you're dropping him on his head, and he kicks out. Now maybe if the heels were going to go on to win, possibly then you can excuse it. But they weren't even winning. So he kicks out of the Panama Sunrise. Adam Cole goes for the last shot. Tries to deliver the knee to the back of the head to McAfee, but Oney Lorcan, like a Secret Service agent, he jumps in the way and takes the bullet for McAfee. Pete Dunne hits a bitter end to Adam Cole, sternum first onto a steel chair. Right onto the top part, the chair is opened. Right onto the top part of that chair, like his throat or his sternum, it was brutal. And I thought that was it. Because coming into the match, I mean, I thought the heels were winning. Now, I had pitched a finish earlier today where Pat McAfee pins Adam Cole, even if it was just Pete Dunne putting him on top of him, because imagine the heat. Imagine how much more insufferable this guy would have been on TV. But you could have had Pete Dunne win, because I think Pete Dunne should be primed soon to challenge for the NXT Championship. So when he hit the bitter end on top of the chair, as brutal as it looked, I said, well, that's a hell of a spot to end the match on. Unfortunately, it did not end the match. And this was probably the biggest problem I had with this match. There were at least a couple of different near falls that they did towards the end that should have been it. This was one of them. This looked brutal. The way he dropped Cole on it. I mean, imagine the angle from years ago with Randy Savage and Ricky Steamboat with the ring bell. I mean, that's kind of what this was. But then again, it was just another move. It was just another near fall. Didn't really mean anything. And by the end, Adam Cole was fine. That's the kind of stuff that it bugs me. Just annoys me. Roderick Strong broke it up. At least he didn't kick out. It was broken up by somebody else, but it's not like he was selling it after the fact. But here's how the match ends. So after all of this, after everything I've just described to you, Kyle O'Reilly climbs up. He is on the rope, not even like the corner, but he's on the top rope. And he drops a knee drop across a chair that has been set up across the face of Oney Lorcan and gets the pin. And Undisputed Era wins War Games. They improve their War Games record to an even 2-2 in this fourth War Games match that they have now participated in. There were four or five different near falls that should have ended this match. I just told you about a couple of them. I think it really should have ended on the bitter end to Cole, but obviously they wanted the baby faces to go over, and so it couldn't end on that spot. I just think for it to end, look, I'm not saying that getting a knee drop off the top rope if you've got a chair across your face, it's a pretty brutal move, but after everything we saw in this match, it felt anticlimactic that's how the War Games match ended. On a knee drop off the top rope. I don't know, it felt underwhelming to me. Like, that's how it ends? After everything we've seen, that's how this match ends? So it's one of the only criticisms I really have. I really did love the match. I thought the match itself was incredible. I thought the action was incredible. There were some great near falls to it. I just think a few too many near falls. I would have liked to have seen them, kind of cut that number down a little bit, end the match a little bit differently. But a very good takeover, ended with an excellent main event. I really can't hate on that main event. Overall, it was an excellent match. It was a hell of a match. A lot of brutal spots in there, and the baby faces went over. So my predictions were basically the polar opposite for the War Games matches. I thought that it would be the heels going over in the main event to put more heat on McAfee's group, and I thought that the baby faces were going over in the women's match. It was just the opposite. So basically, whoever had the advantage in the match, they lost. That's how it goes. You can't always be right. But I thought it was a very good takeover show. Again, these takeover shows, they're just different. You almost have to grade them a little bit differently than the traditional takeover shows, because that crowd, it's like it's the third man. That crowd is such an important part of what they do. And it's nice that they actually have people there, even if it's only 100 people. It's more than you have on Raw or SmackDown. So at least they have some people, they have some noise. It just doesn't feel like a takeover. Imagine these matches in front of a packed crowd. People would have been going nuts. They would have been going crazy for this stuff. That's one of the things I miss. It's one of the things I hope we can get back to very soon. On Twitter, these are the results so far to the Twitter poll. You can vote and let me know what you thought about tonight's pay-per-view. 86% thumbs up so far, 13% thumbs down, so... a very positive reception so far to TakeOver. People seem to enjoy the show. Rodimus Prime with the $20. Thank you, Rodimus. Rodimus is beastly here on this stream. Great TakeOver show tonight. Both War Games matches were amazing. Granny Hell Yeah. That's a hell of a name. Granny Hell Yeah with the drop here. This show reminded me of why I like wrestling. James Hollins, who has the worse luck in wrestling than Billy Corgan? And what is the status of the NWA? Well, that has absolutely nothing to do with NXT, but I'll answer it anyway. The NWA is still very much alive. Billy Corgan shot those rumors down months ago. He says the NWA is very much alive. I question their future. They just lost. I forgot the lady's name, but she was something like a general manager for them behind the scenes. She was a very important part of their operation. And she just left recently. They've lost other talent that either their contracts expired or they let them go. So in some ways, it feels to me like the writing is on the wall for the NWA. But he insists that they're not going anywhere. So I guess we're just going to have to wait and see if he's telling the truth. I think in his mind, he believes that, yeah, they're going to continue on. But for how much longer can they go on like this without going back to doing regular shows? And what kind of roster are they going to have left? I don't know. Jesse Moctezuma. Jim Cornette is going to be upset. Women's hardcore wrestling and Rhea Ripley did not win. Is he a big fan of Rhea Ripley? It's hard not to be. What's not to like about Rhea Ripley? I mean, she looks like a star. She's going to be a big star. I don't even think Vince McMahon can fuck up Rhea Ripley. I mean, I might live to regret those words. You might come back here. We might look back a year, 2 years from now and say, Solomonster, boy, were you wrong. I don't see how Vince McMahon, even the booking on the main roster, could possibly fuck up Rhea Ripley. But then again, never underestimate the power of WWE booking to fuck things up. Oz and Glorious just stopping by to say hello. AEW, AEW, he says. Trying to stir the pot. Brian Gallagher, thank you for the $20. I've been listening to your podcast for a couple of years now, but it is my first time watching your review. I really like your insights and opinions. Easily one of my top three wrestling podcasts. Keep up the great work. Thank you. That means a lot. All the tweets I got when Spotify had their year-end thing and everybody was sending tweets about their most listened to podcast. I got so many tweets from people who've listened to like 100 or 60 or 30 episodes of the show, 9,000 minutes. Just to think that people have listened to 9,000 minutes of me ranting and raving all year is just crazy to me. But I love it. I appreciate it. Joe Olivo just caught your live stream. What do you think of Balor against McAfee against Dunn for the belt? I don't think you need to do a triple threat. I would much rather just see Balor and Dunn. But now with Karrion Kross coming back, we may just be going right into Karrion Kross and Finn Balor. That may be the match. So they have a lot of options now with Kross coming back. And Ciampa's back to his winning ways. Kushida, they've kept Kushida very strong. I would be shocked if we don't get a Finn Balor-Kushida match. I don't expect Kushida to win, but it seems like they've been building him up. He's been in kind of a holding pattern. They've been waiting, I think, until Balor comes back. And now Balor is on his way back. I bet you they do that Kushida match. So they have a lot of options right now. They're in a pretty good place. HBKC83, do you believe that Kyle O'Reilly is a top five in-ring performer? In NXT, I do. I don't know about the world, but he's up there. He's very good. In NXT, he's certainly up there. Matthew, is it Sun? Or Sunne? We'll say Sun. Odd question, but how would you suggest booking babyfaces to be weakened in a way that avoids dumb babyface syndrome? Well, I mean, if babyfaces are being, you know, ganged up on, 2-on-1, 3-on-1, 4-on-1, fighting back, but they're just being overwhelmed, right? That's one way. So they show fighting spirit, but the numbers are too much. I mean, there are ways to do it. You know, dumb babyface syndrome is when they get distracted by someone's theme music, or they turn their back at the most inopportune time, or they have the opponent pinned or a submission hold locked on, but somebody jumps up on the apron. Oh no. So they release the hold like a fucking idiot. And then they go over and then, you know, of course they get screwed. That's the kind of dumb babyface shit that I talk about. It really doesn't seem like it would be that hard to book a babyface who isn't a fucking idiot. It just feels that way because WWE does it all the time. But I don't think it's really that hard. A lot of territories, a lot of promotions over the years ago, they found a way to figure it out where their babyfaces didn't come off like a bunch of fools. And that was 30, 40 years ago. If they could do it, why can't you do it today? There's no reason not to. No reason not to. And Theo Johnson, great show. Also, do you have a favorite War Games or Lethal Lockdown match? And do you think we'll see an NXT TakeOver St. Valentine's Day Massacre in 2021? I don't, just because normally they do a TakeOver WrestleMania weekend. And the fact that they're doing a theme show on January 6th tells me that that might be their way of bridging the gap. So I would almost expect if they're going to do anything in February, it might be a TV special, like a themed episode of NXT. But you can't do a takeover in February and then do one a month later. It's too soon. You got to spread them out. So I don't think it'll be a takeover. But maybe a special episode of NXT. Wednesday night's going to be a big night. We're not talking NXT on Wednesday. It's going to be AEW Dynamite. But it's going to be the first show since Sting debuted. And Sting is doing an interview with Tony Schiavone. I don't know if it's in the ring. I don't know if it's going to be a pre-recorded sit-down interview. But that's going to be Sting's first time speaking. I'm very, very, very curious to see what kind of numbers their show does on Wednesday. Can they break a million? I don't think they will. You know, if it were unopposed, I think it might. But they can't seem to break through to that level when they're opposed by NXT. So we're gonna see what kind of juice Sting has. We're gonna see what the follow up is this week with Kenny Omega, right? Winning the AEW championship. He and Don Callis are gonna be in a segment on Impact on Tuesday night. Try to get people to watch Impact on Tuesday on Access TV or on Twitch. Many of you mentioned that Impact is on Twitch. Like I said, I thought tonight's show was a lot of fun. I thought it was a quality show, very good show. Please vote on Twitter at Solomonster is the place to go ahead and vote. I think I'm going to get on out of here. We might take some calls on Wednesday night after the AEW show. I'm sure there'll be a lot to talk about coming out of that show. All the Sting stuff and everything else. And join me for episode 682 next Sunday. I dropped the podcast today went longer than I wanted. It was almost 3 hours long. We had a gigantic This Week in History segment. Please check out the full shows. All those little platform logos you see on your screen right now, you can download and stream the show in so many different ways. I covered a ton of stuff on the full podcast. All the YouTube stuff here, this is just bonus. The main Sound Off drops every Sunday and covers a whole bunch of different topics. Episode 681 is up right now for your listening pleasure. Take care, guys. I'll see you on Wednesday night. Join me live, 10 p.m. as soon as Dynamite goes off the air for more coverage right here on the Sound Off YouTube channel. Hit that sub button and please hit that thumbs up on the way out. I'll catch you on Wednesday night. Ciao.